Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll shift our attention to the Eagles in just a few moments. But first of all, our play-by-play call of the day.
Blast one to deep right field. Stanton looking up. This one is high, it is deep, and it is long gone. Home run number 29 on Despaigne's first pitch in the last of the fourth. Stanton tried to decoy. He was fooling nobody. Nationals 2, Marlins nothing.
And the Nationals just roll on. They're playing, obviously, really well. And as much as we talk about the Dodgers, the Nationals are playing not quite as well, but they're not that far off from where the Dodgers are right now.
You know, the significance of that Bryce Harper homer?
Was that number one? No, let's see.
Not only is it, it was his 150th homer.
Yeah, under the age of 25.
He hit it at the exact same age that Mike Trout hit his 150th home run.
Wow.
To the day. 24 years, 295 days.
Wow.
That's a fascinating statistic. That's a trivia question right there. I don't think that's ever happened in Major League Baseball history.
Wow. Very impressive. Very pleased to be joined by Ed Kras, Burlington County Times. Ed, welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, so here we are, training camp, first preseason game coming up. They've got the Packers opening up on, Thursday night. So it's been a quiet camp, so what kind of progress has been made in this camp?
Well, I think what you've seen is big strides by the offense, the Eagles' offense. You know, they added a couple free agents in Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith, and they drafted a couple kids, and you know, we're going to see just how improved that receiver core is on Thursday night in Green Bay. You know, and Penn State fans will get a good chance to see Matt McGloin throwing to some of these young targets that the Eagles have in place, because I don't expect Jeffrey to play. You know, he battled kind of a sore shoulder these last few days, and really there's no reason to run him out there in a meaningless first preseason game. Torrey Smith won't play long either. So, you know, you're going to see a lot of young receivers. There's been great competition at that group. And Matt McGloin, you know, he's going to see a lot of time, too, because Carson Wentz is going to start, but he's not going to play long. And Nick Foles, who's the primary backup, he's been out the last couple of weeks with some elbow inflammation. So you're going to see a good chunk of Matt McGloin out there on Thursday night.
Yeah, he comes in as the third in all of this. So what kind of read do you have on McGloin as a third?
Well, I think it depends on Foles. They want Foles, obviously, to be the primary backup. And the Eagles just kept two quarterbacks on the active roster last year, and they had a developmental kid named Aaron Murray from the University of Georgia who was on their practice squad. Now, Murray has moved on. Their fourth quarterback in camp is a kid from Tulsa named Dane Evans. He'll probably be on the practice squad. I don't think the Eagles will keep three quarterbacks this year, so that kind of leaves McGloin as the odd man out. But, you know, McGloin's got a good history in this league, so really he's going to put some things on tape for some other teams, and he'll probably find another job once training camp ends, provided Nick Foles is able to get that elbow back to 100%.
People will wonder, how has Carson Wentz looked to this point when he's had the ability to run the offense?
Yeah, he's looked much more confident, much more comfortable than he did last year. You know, you remember last year, how he got the starting job. He broke his ribs, actually, in the first preseason game and didn't see another single minute of action in the preseason and was very limited in practice. And then 8 days before the regular season, the Eagles go and trade their starter, Sam Bradford, to the Minnesota Vikings. And then they elevate Wentz, who was expected to spend the whole year kind of as an inactive player watching from the sidelines. They put him into the number one spot. So it was kind of a trial under fire, if you will, for Wentz last year. This year, much more comfortable, much better grasp of the locker room, and players certainly are looking up to him more than ever because there are a lot of new faces on this team. He went in the offseason and he saw a quarterback's coach, a private quarterback coach out in California. A lot of the NFL quarterbacks do that nowadays, and worked with him on his footwork and his release. And, you know, his footwork seems to be better and his release seems to be quicker. So you're not going to see him a whole lot in the preseason. You're going to kind of have to wait, if you're an Eagles fan, to see the wraps come off in the opener down in Washington, D.C. against the Redskins on September 10th.
You mentioned some of the wideouts that they have brought in. Nelson Aguilar is still there. Yeah. Does he have a role, in your opinion, with this team?
Well, to be honest, he's looked like the best receiver in camp.
Yeah.
He had a terrific spring. You know, Aguilar, of course, had a big problem with drop passes last year to the point of absolute frustration for Eagles fans. I mean, balls that you and I could catch, Steve, in our sleep, he really fought to catch them. So this year he's come in and he's looked like a completely different receiver. And to his, to his credit, I guess you could say, this is his third wide receivers coach that he's had since he's been in the league. So, you know, some of that instability might have not helped him any. He looks like a completely different player this year. And again, we're going to have to see how that translates once the lights come on. You hope he's not one of those players that, you know, it looks great, you know, in practice, and then when the lights come on, they kind of wilt under the heat. But we're going to get a good read on that. And we're going to see a lot of him in the preseason, too, I would suspect, just to make sure the Eagles feel comfortable with him in the slot, because him and Jordan Matthews, who's kind of the proven guy, him and Aguilar are kind of battling now for some snaps in the slot. And Matthews might be the odd man out if Aguilar can show what he's done in practice, if he can kind of translate that into these games.
Guy that they drafted, I found to be just an intriguing little mid to late round pick, was Danelle Pumphrey, because after watching him play Penn State when he was at San Diego State, just looked like a guy that could do a lot of things. He also has some wear and tear on him from college, too. But what have you thought about him so far?
Well, it wasn't encouraging when you have a guy that's 176 pounds and about 5'8", who really didn't have any injuries at San Diego State. He carried the ball over 600 times in college. He comes out 1 week into camp, he hurts a hamstring. So he's on the sidelines for a week with a hamstring injury. That, to me, is the big concern with Donnell Pumphrey, is the weight, 176 pounds. And I spoke to him yesterday, and he told me that he's put on 5 pounds. He has returned to practice, and I know the Eagles like him. They want him to be a part of this offense. They had him doing some things today at practice, it was a very short practice, just kind of working on some different scripted plays, but he had a big role in those. So I know they want him to be a part of this. I just question, you know, San Diego State to the NFL, that's a mighty big step. And at that weight, you know, he's really going to have to show that he can avoid a hit or know how to take a hit if he's going to have any success. But he's very fast. They've compared him to Darren Sproles, you know, the veteran running back that has had one heck of a career, probably will retire after this year, and then the Eagles hope that Pumphrey will be able to step up into that Darren Sproles type of role more of a, in a full-time basis next season. But we're going to get a look at him this year, I'm pretty sure, if he can stay healthy.
Ed, what's the read you have on them defensively to this point?
That's the secondary. I'm sure you've seen some things about the Eagles' secondary. Yeah, that's the big that's the million-dollar question right there, is how will that secondary hold up? You know, in the NFC East, you have a lot of talented receivers. You know, you have Odell Beckham in New York and Terrell Pryor in Washington, who, you know, looks like he's ready to make the jump to being a full-time wide receiver after a good year in Cleveland. And then in Dallas, you have Dez Bryant. So the Eagles are going to have to find a way to cover these guys. And right now, they really don't have a number one cornerback. They want Jalen Mills, a second-year pick from LSU. He was picked in the 7th round to kind of be that guy. And he may eventually be that guy. He got a lot of playing time last year, but the bulk of it came kind of in the slot, you know, on the inside. We're going to see if he can make that transition to the outside. I think what the Eagles are hoping, and how they've sort of made this conscious effort to build that defense, is up front on the defensive line, where they added their number one pick in Derek Barnett from Tennessee, who broke Reggie White's sack record while he was a volunteer. He's going to play at one of the defensive end spots. They brought in veteran Chris Long, whose dad Howie Long is in the Hall of Fame after a great career in Oakland. So he's here. And then, of course, they have Brandon Graham, and they need Vinny Curry, who they paid a lot of money to after going into last season and had a very disappointing year last year. They need Vinny Curry to step up. But then on the interior, they have Fletcher Cox, who's probably one of the top five defensive linemen in the league. And then they added Tim Jernigan from Baltimore in a trade, who they really like his pass rush ability. I think he has 13 sacks in 3 years, which is pretty good for a defensive tackle. So I think what they want to do is kind of really put the heat on the quarterback, get him off his spot, make him a little uncomfortable, and I think that's one way that they're going to try to protect the secondary, that clearly they need somebody to step up there, or they're going to have to add somebody. I think they'll add somebody either via a trade or once cutdowns are made at the end of the month. I don't know who's going to shake loose. It's tough to cover the passer, or tough to cover in the NFL. It's a passing league. If you have a good cornerback, I'm not sure you're going to really go out and cut one at the end of August. But whoever gets cut might be better than what the Eagles have. So that's the million-dollar question. They're going to have to probably outscore some teams at this point to win games, and they're going to have to hope that pass rush is able to get more than the 34 sacks they had last year to kind of take some of the heat off the secondary.
Does Barnett look like he's, at the moment, a pass rush specialist, or can he be an every down guy down the road?
He'll be an every down guy. There's no question. Derek Barnett, when you talk to him, I don't know if you ever had a chance to talk to him, Steve, but he's a hardworking kid, and he's always talking about his technique and trying to get better in his technique, and he's trying to learn some different pass rush moves. And I spoke to him a little bit earlier in the week, and maybe Sunday, and he said that he wants all of his pass rushes to look the same, which is something you don't really think about, because you don't want to ticket telegraph to an offensive tackle what your move is going to be by the way you line up or how high or low you are in your stance. So he wants to try to perfectionist, I guess you could say. He wants to kind of make every move look the same, and he's always working on his technique. And they like him to stop the run. He probably needs to add maybe five more pounds, but they drafted Barnett to be an every down guy, and I think eventually he will be that. This year, I think you're going to see him more kind of in pass rush situations, and we'll see how many sacks he gets. It's not an easy position to adjust to in the NFL. He did great at it in college. Like I said, he broke Reggie White's record at Tennessee. We'll see how he does. Watching him, he looks inconsistent. He looks up and he looks down. So I think that's to be expected for a lot of rookies. Unfortunately, we put a lot of heat on these first-round guys. They're supposed to come in and set the world on fire, so to speak. And I think that expectation is there for Barnett, but it might take a little bit of time. But I think eventually he'll get there.
After the CTE study of the 100 brains came out in 99, of course, were obviously on the road to CTE, or had shown signs of it, are the ones they examined. John Urschel, Penn State's John Urschel, 4.0 MIT guy now, retired. You did a really interesting article talking with the Eagles in late July about this. What was the feedback you received from them when they talked about the study?
Well, the feedback is this game has given them a good life in a lot of cases. It's helped them make a very good living for their family, for their kids. So the trade-off is what they pretty much said, is they understand the risks, but this is what they love to do. This is the game that's kind of given them the money to raise their families. It's given, Malcolm Jenkins told me, it's given him kind of a way to affect the community, to get involved in communities. It gives him a platform. So he understands the trade-off. If I'm John Urschel and I'm a 4.0 mathematician, there's no way I would be messing with football either. I would put that great mind to work in another way. So I just think that the Eagles and football players in general understand the risks involved. I think, Steve, where it might have the longer lasting impact is at the lower levels. Once parents have children that are in middle school who are pestering mom and dad to, hey, can I play football? What's their answer going to be? Are they going to let them, or are they not going to let them? And then if they don't let them, you're going to have kind of a watered down effect going from high school to college and then in the NFL. So you might see kind of maybe a diluted product because it just isn't as much talent, because not as many kids are going to play it. That's where I think you really, really have to keep an eye on how this thing proceeds, because I think it could have a long-lasting impact on the long-term health of the game. You know, I had a child that wanted to play football when he was in grade school, and we wouldn't let him. You know, we said, hey, wait till middle school, wait till your brain is more developed. And a lot of these players even told me, Zach Ertz, the tight end, told me that I think you should probably just go to football or to flag football. He said there's no reason to block and tackle until at least high school. So there should be more flag right. football and just kind of teach those types of skills, and then maybe start to introduce hitting once you're, you know, more of a 15 or 16 year old. So I don't know if there's any good answers out there, but hopefully there'll be some technology that the NFL or some helmet company is able to develop that will help stem some of the, you know, some of the head issues that we have today. Or you know, I've heard people say we should not have football helmets at all, you know, or go back to the leather helmet days. Because then you're not as apt to use your head to lead in a tackle. You're more apt to do a tackle more fundamentally sound because you don't want to hurt your head. You put that helmet on and you feel invincible in some cases. But if you go back to a leather helmet or no helmet, that kind of takes some of that away, and you have to tackle correctly, and maybe you won't see as many head injuries. I don't know what the answer is. I thought the Eagles, for the most part, though, understood the risks involved, and they were grateful that they had the opportunity to make money and to raise their family in a well-to-do environment.
Ed, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time and the insight. Very much. Great stuff.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Ed Kras, who does a great job. He's covered the Eagles now for years. For years he's covered them with the Burlington County Times. Does a great job. I mean, really does. All right, we will take a break. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to be with you on this Tuesday. James Franklin on the show tomorrow. We'll talk football with the head coach, and he'll join us on the show tomorrow. We're going to have him on, I think 4:06 tomorrow is when we have him on. So we'll do that. And Spider Caldwell coming up on Thursday. Thursday's your last day in, right?
Yes, sir. Then you have Chad Hershberger. Yes, sir.
I'm here on Friday.
Yes. So being the voice of Penn State football, what are your realistic expectations for Penn State this year? What do you see out of them? Are they going to take down Ohio State? Are they going to go past Michigan? Like, what's going to happen?
I think what we have here is a situation where every week is going to be like a playoff game. You know, obviously for James Franklin, he wants to evaluate a team getting better, progress, things like that. But every week when you're in the position that Penn State is now in, which is the position you want to be in, you want to be in this position, where every week, regardless of the opponent, it's a playoff game. Play Akron, got to get out of the gate. You play Pitt, you got to get it done. Get Georgia State. You're like, Georgia State. Guess what? You got to get it done. You have no choice. I mean, you have to. I mean, if you want to put yourself in the position you want to be in, every week is like a playoff game, regardless of who you're playing. I mean, that's how I look at it. That's how I approach it. I think that they have worked their way brilliantly into his fourth year to be in the spot. Now, last year, they did put themselves in that spot. They were able to win their way into a spot when they beat Ohio State, where the rest of the season was just a series of playoff games. Right? Can't win the East unless you win at Purdue. Can't win the East unless you beat Indiana. Can't win the East unless you beat Iowa. You can't win the East unless you beat Rutgers. And then finally, Ohio State in overtime beat Michigan. And guess what? You can win the East now by beating Michigan State. Now you have to go out and you have to beat Wisconsin to win the Big Ten title and get yourself to a New Year's Six game. they did all of that. So my point is that we've now seen the team in that position and how they react to the fact that every week is like a playoff game to them. Now they're going to have a full season of it. And this is an exciting time to be a Penn State fan. This is what you want. You want your team to be in this position where you are considered one of the teams that has a shot at it. Well, they're a team that has a shot at it. And with that in mind, regardless of the opponent, okay, every game's a playoff game. Good. That's what I wanted to see. It's going to make the tension in the stadium even greater and more fun.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. During the break, the suit visited the studio. For some reason, not one of us got the Stockholm Syndrome. All right. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. And we go to Green Bay for that. Troy Guyon, arrested on charges of intoxicated driving in June, suspended for the first four games of the 2017 season for violating the league policy on performance-enhancing drugs, has now been released by Green Bay. Started 15 games last year, made 30 tackles, 9-year vet, 3-year deal worth $11.25 million in February 2016. Packers now wipe his base salary of $1.7 million and roster bonuses of $1.6 million off their cap. He was suspended for 3 games and 15 for violating the substance abuse policy after he was arrested in February 2015. He had been with the Minnesota Vikings before that. He was then arrested June 21st in Hawaii, and police reported his blood alcohol level at 0.86, just above the legal limit. About an hour after his early morning arrest in Waikiki, he smelled of alcohol and marijuana, stumbled when he walked, and spoke with slurred speech when police pulled him over, according to the police report. First, it doesn't sound good.
I mean, honestly, if there's not a more like obvious testament to addiction being a thing, take a guy like that who just threw away millions of dollars. Like, it's just, it's insane. I'll never understand it.
That is why you are addicted to it. So.
Right.
You just can't help yourself. Can't help yourself. You have to have it. All right. So, it's 800-795-9565. 800-795-9565. What questions do you have? What questions would you like me to ask James Franklin tomorrow? Going to have him for about 10 minutes. So what questions would you like me to ask him tomorrow?
Well, I'd like to ask him the same question I asked you. I mean, last year, they definitely overachieved. I feel like that was an overachieving season for them. Nobody really expected them to go as far as they did and then have such a dramatic game at the end of the season. Like, is there going to be a letdown because of the dramatic loss, or is there going to be something to motivate them to go forward? Like, that's what I'd love to get inside his head on that and what he's seeing with his kids so far.
Well, I can tell you that part's not an issue. I think the way he approaches things, I've always said, it's amazing when you're winning some and losing some, like he did for the first 2 years and into 4 games of last season. Okay, win some, lose some. And I've pointed out a million times all the circumstances surrounding that. I mean, most of it's common sense, but you have to keep pointing it out because some people don't have common sense. That he would talk about, you know, we've got to win this week, we've got to win this week. And, of course, you know, when you're winning some and losing some, people will criticize any statement that you make. Oh, what does that mean? Now, for the fans, I completely understand. Oh, you got to beat Pitt. For the fans, oh, you got to beat Ohio State. Now, I understand that. I mean, that's okay. There's a difference between being a fan and being a professional. It's a huge difference between being a fan and being a professional. And part of that is when he talks about you have to win this week, I know when I prepare for games, I don't prepare for the Pitt game when I'm doing the Akron game. I don't prepare for the Pitt game. Now, obviously, I've mentioned a million times, I do a lot of work in April and May to get both football and basketball. So I am ahead of the game when it comes to, you know, starting out at zero for everybody. In other words, all the career numbers are updated for every opponent that Penn State has, each player, things like that. That way, when I get to the week of the game, now I'm updating and adding in the current season. All right? But I don't prepare for Pitt the week of the Akron game at all. Zero. Because Penn State's not playing Pitt, playing Akron. And that's how you have to handle it as a football team. That's why I taught, and so he, when he talks about that approach, I always felt that that approach, if you ingrain that into your team, I always felt that that was the approach that would pay off in the Purdue game and not the Ohio State game. Because everybody, anybody can get ready mentally for the Ohio State game. Anybody can. Anybody can get ready for the Pitt game mentally. Right? The key is then how do you then, after you've had success or whatever, how do you then handle the next game? And you've already had that approach ingrained. Right? I think that's where the payoff actually is. And I think because he's ingrained this approach in them, I think that what you're talking about is not an issue, even though it is a legitimate question. It's a legitimate question, but I don't think it's an issue because they've already ingrained this one-at-a-time attitude. I also think that because they went through last season where they finally got on a run, and when they did, the last 6 weeks of the season were playoff games to them, and they succeeded with it, it gave them confidence. It gave them a level of confidence.
They got a super interesting run in the middle of the season, though. I mean, it's brutal. At Northwestern,
sure,
home for Michigan, at Ohio State,
yep,
at Michigan State. That's that's a four-game rip right there. That is rough.
Yeah. There's one off week. There's a bye week separated in there between Northwestern
and Michigan. Oh, yes, there is.
You're right.
So they
got that. That right. So, but that's fine. If you're going to be good, then play a good schedule, which they do in the conference, and then, you know, if you handle it, you're going to get even more respect.
It's true.
And that's what I'm looking for. They've got a quarterback who's a real leader, who knows how to play. I think Joe Moorhead did a great job as the season went along of understanding that you can use all of Trace's gifts. In other words, you notice he ran a little bit more starting with the Minnesota game. That was Joe Moorhead making that adjustment. And Joe Moorhead is really good at that. And at the same time, you know, his play calling, as time went along, you know, for a play caller, the speed of the game comes into play too. I mean, Brett Pry called defensive plays for like 7 years, but he, you know, you go in a little bit of a hiatus. I asked him the other day, I said, Brent, when did you start to really get the feel where the game slowed down for you as a defensive play caller? And he said the Minnesota game. So we just kind of felt like everybody was on the same page. So let's see. I think there are obviously we have a few wrestling fans in the area. So let's talk just briefly about the statement about Nick Soriano.
All right. And
transferring. Flow Wrestling got this story. Official statement from Penn State. Nick Soriano recently requested a release so he could transfer to Rutgers. We granted this release. Subject to Big Ten policy, an intra-conference transfer is required to sit 1 year before they are eligible to participate. Nick is open to transfer to Rutgers and will be subject to that school's policies, conference or otherwise, on transfer and eligibility status. We support and work within Big Ten policy. So Nick Soriano requested his release. He was granted the release. Now the question is, if he wants to go to Rutgers, then what happens there? Okay. So, they want him, you know, there's a conference rule, but he has asked for his release, been granted his release. Okay, now, where do you want to go?
Well, now I'll...
There's 74 other choices. So there's not 350, there's 74.
Now I'm going to plead ignorance on this. Why does he want to leave?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
Oh, he's just asked for a release. He hasn't said why at all.
No, I'm sure he said to Cale and the coaches why, but they haven't. He hasn't had a press conference to say why. Now, this is a guy that I think had a really good shot of being a national champion.
I'm reading an article here in NJ.com that says he could go to Rutgers. That's where he's looking.
Well, see, that's why they're talking about the intra-conference transfer. He'd have to sit a year.
Hmm.
I mean, that's what they're talking about. Now, you know, I'm sure Soriano would love to be able to wrestle right away next year. Some guys are able to do it. Some can't. I don't know what the rules are on that. There was reports they were blocking him, they were not blocking him. But
well, it seems as of today they've made the decision to block him. That's what it's saying here, that they've informed Rutgers that they're blocking him.
No, they put out a statement today saying that he asked for his release. They granted him his release. Once you grant him his release, it's up to him as to where he goes. Okay. So I mean, the statement was today. I think there had been a story that came out earlier saying they were blocking him, and they're saying no, we didn't block him. So he asked for his release, and they granted his release. So, now it's far more dramatic if he blocks. I mean, if they block, but look, somebody wants to go, let him go. You know? Okay. But again, Nick Soriano recently requested release so he could transfer to Rutgers. I mean, Penn State said that. They're very specific about it. We granted this release. Subject to Big Ten policy, an intra-conference transfer is required to sit for 1 year before they are eligible to participate. Nick is open to transfer to Rutgers and will be subject to that school's policies, conference or otherwise, on transfer and eligibility status. We support and work within the Big Ten policy. Pretty plain to me. He wants to go to Rutgers? They said, look, I mean, because they even mentioned Rutgers in the statement. Transfers are always difficult, and especially if they want to transfer inside the conference. It's difficult. But the rules on interconference transfers have changed over the years and have changed in the direction of, but so many guys want to transfer in a sport, want to be eligible right away. They don't want to wait the year.
Well, of course, why would you want to wait a year? I mean, that's, you're at the prime, you know, especially if you're a wrestler. It's not like there's a pro wrestling league out there for you. You know, I mean, he could go to the Olympics or something like that, but after college, there's nothing else. So why would you want to lose a year of eligibility? I understand that whole.
Right. I'm saying, I'm saying that's the issue for him, probably.
Oh,
do I have to sit a year? Because I think he's redshirted. So he's already been out a year. So that would only give him, what, 2 years left, I think, if I understand what his eligibility is.
Yeah, so what it's saying here is that if he go if the
he'd have 2 years left.
If the Big Ten allows it, he can go 3 years at Rutgers, but they have to allow it. If he goes outside the conference, he has 3 years. If he stays in conference and Big Ten adheres to the in conference transfer rules, then he only has 2 years left.
That right. That's my point.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the story. You know, obviously it then comes up as, you know, the politics of it as to, you know, there's been a story out there. I think one of the reasons Penn State released the statement, I think we had a call here. I think one of the reasons that Penn State released the statement was, I think they feel that there was some misinformation here about him being released and that they're fully aware of where he wants to go. So, they, yeah. This program is so deep that they can go. There's so many different options that Cale Sanderson has. I mean, they're just so deep. Five national champs in this group. I mean, just including Zane, who's all right. Dick and Milton, we'll make it quick here. Hello, Dick. Hello, Dick. There he is. Hi, Dick.
Hey, Steve. Hey, two things real quickly. He's going, he's going. He's not even, they released their roster, and he's not even on it anymore.
Oh, I know. That's why they released him. He's out.
Yeah. And then,
yeah,
and
he's
then
done.
The other thing is, if the Big Ten could, the only two things could happen. If the Big Ten would happen to overrule and not accept Penn State's blocking and wrestling at Rutgers, he could wrestle. And they're not going to do that. They're not going to challenge that. But he could go to Rider and wrestle, and
Is Princeton ever wrestling too?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they're pretty darn good right now, in fact. They're very good. They finished third in the IWAs last year. But he's not going to go to Princeton. If he was going to go to Princeton, he would have gone there in the first place. But irrespective of that, but that's the one thing. But I wanted to tell you, you remember our discussion about Caleb Joseph and your little thing about him last year?
Yep.
He's batting, as of today, he's hitting 290. He's got 6 home runs and 22 RBIs. And you know what? Basically, they really only wanted him to catch the ball, like I told you before, so it didn't roll to the backstop. So he's doing okay.
He still shouldn't have won arbitration with those numbers.
Well, my only point is that you remember you kind of beat him up a little bit, not him personally, but the way they handled it, and he got a raise, and he's earning his raise.
And well, I'm glad he's earning his raise, but you know what? If you and I had those numbers off the season, okay, would have been looked at HR and said, hey, really?
Right. But the other thing is, right.
Now if he goes in for a raise,
they're doing better than we do together. They're doing better.
But now if he goes in for a raise at 290, I would fully support him getting that because he will have earned it.
Yeah, but I say he was basically a defensive backup catcher to Wieters, and Wieters is at Washington, and the two guys that the Orioles ended up with have better stats than Wieters would have had together, much better, in fact, home run-wise and RBI-wise right now. So even I think Wieters hit a grand slam yesterday, but that's just one game. So that was my
comment. You know what?
That's basically what I wanted
Good.
To catch up
cool.
on.
Thank you, Dick. Appreciate it. There's one quick. I'm going to give you a quick comment I heard on a broadcast last night that I found, like, what? Okay, I'll give it to you in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Okay, so last night, I watched just a few minutes of the Pirates game with Detroit last night with the Tigers. And they had a news and notes thing, and part one of the notes was, I think it was the second of three notes up there, was Stephen Piscotty had been optioned by the Cardinals back to Memphis to AAA, and that the interesting fact was that that's the third opening day starter that had been sent to the minors this year. Okay. All factual, all correct, right along the line. And well, the commentator says, well, you know you're having a rough year when stuff like that happens. And I thought to myself, excuse me, but they're still ahead of you in the standings. What kind of year are you having?
Yep.
It's like, you know, you're having a rough year. Okay, but they're still ahead of you.
True story. Homers, like, man. Homers, man.
Oh, I have no problem with it. I understand. I mean, he was just making a general comment about you're having a rough, because the Cardinals are having a rough year. So he's right about that. But I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but they're still in front of you.
Right. No, absolutely.
even though the Pirates are playing better. They're playing better. They've had a really nice performance last night. All right. James Franklin tomorrow on the show. Spider Caldwell on Thursday. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.